morning and welcome to Country Breakfast. I'm Clint Jasper. As soldiers started returning from World War I, state governments around Australia often tried to settle them on parcels of land in the hope they'd be able to farm it. But as we'll hear this morning, quite often the land wasn't that good and there was some backbreaking labour involved to clear it. And in Beerburrum in Queensland, the effort ended in failure.
So I think the main reason why it failed was more down to the individual people, that they weren't really suited for life on the land. But, you know, the government saw that pineapples were being grown in the region, and particularly to the north of Beerburrum, actually more onto the Sunshine Coast proper. But I think that they were just overwhelmed by what it really takes to plant and to create a cultivation from scratch.
That's coming up. But first off, Jess Davies is in the studio with me now to run through this week's rural news. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning.
Now, Australia has officially its own Watergate scandal, with this week's news dominated by a controversial water buyback purchase. Can you just recap what this story is all about?
Sure. So this story goes back to 2017. Then Agriculture Minister Barnaby Joyce signed off on an $80 million purchase of a water entitlement from a company called Eastern Australian Agriculture. Just over a week ago, a story on the project revealed that Energy Minister Angus Taylor used to be a director and secretary of that company. Now, here's where it gets a little bit complicated. Eastern Australian Agriculture was owned by a parent company called Eastern Australia Irrigation, which is registered in the Cayman Islands. And Angus Taylor is also listed as a co-founder and director of that company. We should make clear that this is all before he entered Parliament.
And this actual sale, the $80 million, was some of the highest ever prices paid for water in the Murray-Darling Basin.
That's right. And the value of that $80 million purchase and the links with the Energy Minister have now come under scrutiny amid claims it didn't provide value for money for taxpayers. More reporting later in the week also revealed that Eastern Australian Agriculture donated $55,000 to the Liberal Party before the 2013 election. On Monday night, in a now infamous interview with RN Drive with Patricia Karvelas, Barnaby Joyce defended his handling of the multi-million dollar water buyback. That interview went for a full 30 minutes, but let's listen to just a little bit of that.
I do not negotiate the price.
But you were the minister responsible.
I do not negotiate.
So who were, let me answer the questions here. Barnaby Joyce, let's just play this in a really traditional way. I ask the questions and you answer them. Who were the shareholders of Eastern Australian Irrigation?
I do not negotiate the price. I do not negotiate the vendor.
That interview definitely put the story firmly in the spotlight at the start of the week. How did that affect the election campaigning?
Well, it affected the whole week's news, essentially. But Prime Minister Scott Morrison had to come out on Tuesday and he defended the sale and the former Agriculture Minister.
The Auditor General will look over these things, but the Minister's relied totally on the advice provided by his department, and that department had conducted those negotiations at arm's length and inquired into the relevant matters required under the Act. So the Minister has acted in accordance with the legislation.
And then I think to stop everyone playing those news grabs from the RN interview, Barnaby Joyce came out and held another press conference and continued to try and deflect some responsibility for the sale onto the Queensland Labor government.
A Queensland Labor minister made the recommendation to us. What is also vitally important is the minister, myself, at that time was not involved in negotiations of price or of vendor. That is done by the department at arm's length to me.
How's federal Labor responded to this whole Watergate saga?
Well, the state government has come out. The Queensland Natural Resources Minister, Dr. Anthony Lynham, downplayed his department's involvement in the purchase of the water licence. He says the Commonwealth is responsible for due diligence and governance when it comes to purchase matters under the Murray-Darling Basin Plan.
Now, our role in 2017, when the Commonwealth purchased the overland water rights to these properties, was purely administrative. That was to enable the water rights purchased to be transferred to the Commonwealth. That's what the state does. Now, he has all responsibility for due diligence and price, something he doesn't appear to have done. That's all his responsibility. Due diligence and price was Barnaby Joyce's responsibility.
All of this has led to mounting calls for a royal commission into the whole basin plan. It's kind of more fuel on that simmering fire out in the country. Are there any moves afoot to make that a reality?
Not yet. While the federal government says it doesn't support a royal commission, it will refer all government water buybacks since 2008 to the Auditor General for review. This is a move that irrigators have welcomed. So let's have a listen to Steve Wan, the CEO of the National Irrigators Council.
From an irrigator point of view, irrigators have never been advocates of buybacks. But where it happens, obviously, we all want to be assured that the money's been spent well, and everything that we've been told about these things post the events suggests that the value was established independently, but that's now up to an Auditor General to have a look at.
And Labor's water spokesman, Tony Burke, announced that if elected, it would conduct an inquiry into the 2017 deal with the powers of a royal commission. He says a review by the Auditor General doesn't have the coercive power needed to get the answers.
Why do questions have to be answered with this particular purchase? It's simple. If you decide, instead of running a tender process, that you're going to choose a particular property and knock out access to the same contracts from any of the Australian farmers that are around, then you have to be able to answer the questions to establish that no conflicts of interest were involved.
Interesting, they only want to look at that specific purchase. But I'd say if you didn't know about Watergate, now you know. So thanks for that, Jess. Moving on, last week, 11 animal rights activists in Queensland were charged with trespass after chaining themselves to equipment at an abattoir. It's on a long list of protests and actions recently that are really fueling a rising tension between particularly livestock agriculture and activists. Are there any kind of developments in that?
Yeah, so the National Farmers Federation has now joined forces with the red meat industry to launch advice for primary producers if they do encounter trespassers. NFF Chief Executive Tony Maher says farmers need to be better prepared for trespassers and that there needs to be greater deterrence to stop these kinds of activities. But the lobby group also wants to engage consumers to help bridge what they're calling the urban-rural divide.
We will be undertaking a coordinated, comprehensive campaign around telling our story of agriculture and farming and why it is so important, why we do things, how we do things, and trying to bridge what we think is a gap between the rural and urban communities about where their food comes from, how it's produced and how their fibre is produced, because everyone values it. We know that people respect and admire the agriculture industry, just think there's a gap in there in terms of the level of awareness of the progressive nature of the industry, but also that we need to, as an industry, continue working to maintain that community confidence and awareness.
There has been other rural news this week. The multi-peril crop insurance market is in disarray. Can you just explain what this insurance is and why it's failing?
So this was once hailed as the silver bullet that would drought-proof Australian grain growers. Much like you can get comprehensive car insurance, life insurance and income protection, which are designed to protect you from the worst kinds of events, multi-peril crop insurance has been available in Australia for over 4 years and essentially covers the cost of planting a crop when it's wiped out by drought, floods, fire, storms or frost. Not many farmers have taken it up. And now insurance companies have withdrawn their offerings en masse. This week, the grain industry's peak body released its annual report on multi-peril crop insurance, which found the market is in disarray with providers exiting the market and a lack of products available. Now, grain growers found big payouts in 2018 and a lack of critical mass were contributing factors in that. And Chief Executive David McEwen wants it to become an election issue, and the organisation is calling for government tax subsidies to help kickstart the industry.
Yeah, there's a whole range of commercial challenges which make it difficult for a multi-peril crop insurance market to get established in Australia. When we compare ourselves internationally, we do have a relatively small market. We also do have quite a variable operating environment and variable weather system. So what we did see was actually a really dry 2018 right across the East Coast. So that really took a lot of a hit on a couple of these new emerging players in the multi-peril crop insurance market.
I can say from experience there's crickets when you ask the government what they think about tax subsidies for that insurance. So what does all of this mean for farmers?
Well, for farmers who have been taking out this insurance, multi-peril crop insurance, in recent seasons, they won't be able to access it this year.
Right. I think in my time as a rural reporter, I've seen drones for picking, drones for sowing weeds, drones for surveillance, drones for photography. What is the latest development with drones in agriculture?
So now drones are being used to shoot native tree seeds into cropping country to revegetate that agricultural land. University of New England researcher Dr. Rhiannon Smith is leading this seeding project that's aimed at restoring habitats for birds, bats and beneficials on cotton farms. She says the use of drones can aid revegetation on a much larger scale and at a much bigger speed.
If you think about the amount of native vegetation we require in this Australian landscape, or how much we've removed, we have an awful lot of revegetation to do. And we just can't do the revegetation required on the scale that's required. So we've brought drones in from the UK. They have very large drones that have modified air rifles on them. So we're actually shooting pellets of seed and fertiliser and everything else that a tree needs to get up and going into the ground.
And finally, onto some movement in the dairy industry.
Yeah, that's right. So this week, the Federal Labor Party has come out saying it believes that without government intervention, the dairy sector faces the real threat of extinction and that a bipartisan approach is needed to save it. Agriculture spokesperson Joel Fitzgibbon says it's time that politicians of all stripes agree and has continued his calls for the coalition to support Labor's proposal for a minimum farm gate milk price. He was back on the far north coast of New South Wales this week in the marginal Nationals held seat of Page for a roundtable with the local dairy industry.
There was one thing on which we were totally agreement today, and that is that we face the really serious prospect of not having a dairy industry in Australia. We now face the very real prospect that we'll be importing the overwhelming majority of our dairy products, including our drinking milk, and I don't think that's a proposition that falls well upon any Australian.
Jess Davis, thank you very much for that comprehensive wrap of Rural News.
Thanks, Clint.